हरि ओम सहनाववतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यंकरवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिव सरि गौर भक्त वृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
Chaitanya Charitamrita, Chapter 13, At the Advent of Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, page 17. Jagannath Misra was a Brahmin, therefore people would send him all bodily necessities, money, cloth, grain, and so on. While Lord Chaitanya was in the womb of Sachimata, Jagannath Misra received all the necessities of life without asking for them. Because of the presence of the Lord in his family, everyone offered him due respect as a Brahmana. In other words, if a Brahmana or Vaishnava sticks to his position as an eternal servant of the Lord and executes the will of the Lord, there's no question of scarcity for his personal maintenance or the needs of his family. Right? Because if you're surrendered to Krishna, we have to remember that the material world belongs to Krishna. It's functioning by his direction. So then Krishna will take care, like that. Now, take care means how will be, there's no scarcity, so it's then you have to see as the thing is what do you actually require, and all that. Because sometimes it's what we think we need, and what we actually need is not actually that important. Just like, let's say, there was, I don't know, it started a few years ago, big airlines would make these special arrangements for people who owned their own airplanes, that it was cheaper to fly on for them whenever they did go than to maintain an airplane, like that. So they have like suites, you know, huge kind of things, but it's still cheaper than maintaining an airplane, right? So unless you're constantly flying in it, then it's not really worth it. So that's what we mean, what you actually require. Does that make sense? You know, so
I don't need my three airplanes?
No. Yeah, one in pink, one in blue, and one in, you know. Yeah, one in yellow. Yeah, no. Like that.
But Maharaj, why is it so difficult for us as aspiring devotees to have full faith in Krishna and surrender?
Because the thing is, when the aspect of that faith that Krishna is taking care, Krishna is everything. Because we have the aspect is that we've left Krishna's, you know, service and all that to try to exploit Krishna's energy. And the point is since it is Krishna's energy, it only works the way he likes it to. So one, you won't be able to exploit the internal potency. As soon as one has this mentality, the separatist mentality, then immediately you're dealing with the external energy, like that. Because tatastha shakti means that's potency that holds together the spiritual and material together, right? Is one aspect of it. So therefore, like the soul and the body, the soul is spiritual, the body is material. So the functioning of how you deal, if you're not seeing it in the context of Krishna, you are dealing with material energy, no matter where you are. And if you're seeing things in connection with Krishna, you're dealing with the internal potency, no matter where you are. Right? So we're not accustomed to that. That's why it's so hard. So we're thinking that unless I do it myself, then it's not going to work. And especially you have the difficulty of the you know, in the Kali Yuga, where you don't have that aspect of Paramparan tradition, and then you also now the breakdown of the kind of like the social structures and that, and the personal relationships, respective authority, all these kind of things. So it makes it even more and more a difficulty. But the point is that since it's the natural position of the soul to serve Krishna, it can be done in a moment. It's just that it generally, that's why there's sadhana bhakti, because it takes some practice. Does that make sense? Yeah. So it's just a matter if we stick at it, then Krishna's pleased, then it'll start to work. Yeah. Does that make sense? So it's just that we're looking to exploit his energies, and that will make us happy. But the point is that it can't make you happy because those energies are, how you say? Just on the note. The energies themselves, naturally interacting with them, there'll be some experience because we as an individual and as a personality and the energies as personalities, then there's going to be, you know, some experiences there. So the Vedas then make a distinction between happiness or sukha and ananda, right? So sukha simply means removing the trouble that's there. Mm-hmm. And ananda means that experience of, how you say, Krishna's pleasure.
Yes.
Right? So when Krishna is, when the complete whole is happy, you're happy.
Yes.
So that's ananda.
Yes.
And so those who are on that platform, you know, prema and that, then they say how it's like an unlimited ocean, and these others, they don't, it's, you know, some of the calf's hoof print, you know, that's, and the calf's hoof print, that's counting the whole material world. That's not just what we know, but the whole Mahatattva. That's when they want to be gracious, you know, but otherwise, you know, it's a fraction of a portion of a drop, but like this. And, so, you can see is that the spiritual, or the ananda, will already include sukha. It will already include that. Because in Krishna's pastimes, you see there are obstacles.
Yes.
Right? Because when you're dealing with mechanics, there's always going to be, there's so many options that can happen. To see that it happens in the line that you want, that takes endeavor. That's where the organization is, the management is, the cooperation and all that.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense? Because from any one thing, you can get so many options. So to keep it moving in the way that you want, then that's going to take an effort. Because you want a particular result for Krishna's pleasure. So that you've removed the obstacle, and the happiness comes from that, that doesn't have any value to those in the spiritual world.
Yes.
So it means that the point of it being a drop of pleasure is all it does, all it is, because they're tasting the ocean of ananda. Does that make sense? So that's the whole thing, is that it's Krishna's pleasure. That's the positive. The other one is just you have to remove the negative, because Krishna, it's all these opposites are there. Because if the positive, you have to have the negative. You have the unlimited, you have to have the infinitesimal. Right? You know, that's just how Krishna is. He is everything, so that means he's complete because everything is included.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So then here is that when they're seeing everything in connection of Krishna, then all their facilities is there. Now it may be how you like it, may not be how you like it, but if you think about it, means anybody who thinks about it in Krishna consciousness, they've never really had a bad time as far as basic things. You've gotten some rest, you've gotten something to eat, some place to, you could, you know, lay down and sleep. You know, you maybe can't call it yours. You maybe can't, you know, how you say, you know, like in the Brahmacharya ashram, put down a little marble corner or something. You know, you maybe can't do that, you know. But at the same time, it's all there for, if you look at it, there hasn't been any problem. If you think about it. Right? You know, there may be things we wish it was this way or wish it was that way, but if we look at it, you know, we survive. We're going on. It's going on nicely. And that's us who are not necessarily that situated nicely in sadhana. And so the more we get situated, the more the facility, you know, then the more the things are there. So it's coming from Krishna consciousness. It's not coming from a position. Sometimes it's mistaken that, oh, once a senior devotee, you know, because of that position, that's why you get some facility. Or the president, he gets facility because of that, or the sannyasi, or the guru, like that. But that's not actually the reason. The reason is, if you're more Krishna conscious, all things are there. And the devotee being satisfied, then whatever comes, he's happy with. So Krishna may give more, Krishna may give less. You know? like that. But you'll see, it's always enough. So that's the position that's there. So the point is that if you're serving Krishna, so we're thinking because I do the work, and because of the work, I've generated the results. But Krishna's pointing that out, that you have the right to do your service, but you can't claim the results are yours. It means it may be your quota, but you can't claim you generated them. Because someone else is doing the same work and not getting that result. So it depends upon how the modes of nature and everything. So a whole mechanical system's going on. So the constant point is you're being conscious, you're being conscious of your duties, performing your duties, and you being God conscious. Those things you can continue. What particular facilities are there, what you can do, those things you can't guarantee. Because that's always changing. In the material world, it's always adjusting. Mm-hmm. It's transforming. So you can't expect that it'll necessarily be steady. Especially if we come from backgrounds that aren't steady. You know, like that. So because of that, then, because even we say is, oh no, but you know, I'm not getting the facilities I want, but is the facilities you want today the same as yesterday? No, because you read on internet about this new thing like this, and now you got to have that, and you know, and so then it doesn't necessarily work. But you see, let's say you go back into grandparents or great grandparents, they always had what they needed, and it was the same every day, day in, day out, and so it was regulated, it worked like that, and it goes on fine. So. The key to all these different aspects is just that regularity. So that's why then in the Vedic system, that regularity, the mode of goodness, is such a prominent feature. Because by that regularity, then things will go nicely. Does that make sense? So we're thinking, no, because I work hard and this and that. Yes, but only if you work hard on a regular basis. So the thing is, on the material platform, unless you're regular, you don't really get any facility. So the same way spiritual, unless you're regular. Because the nature of the soul being eternal, then regular is a part of their nature. But as long as we keep jumping around, you know, with the speculation that I'll get more here or more there, we don't necessarily find we're getting more. Right? We say more for less, but we're actually getting less for more. Does that make sense? You know, it's like, yeah. So the difficulty comes down is that our perception that we're the cause of our fortune. So if we're the cause of our fortune, then Krishna, okay, go for it. You know, it's like the little kid, you know, I want to do it. Don't, you know, you're going to help them. No, I'm going to do it. Okay, let's see, you know. And Krishna sits in the heart. He goes along with you. Goes well, doesn't go well, he's always there. You know? But the point is that it's about when we surrender and take shelter of Krishna, then it will work. Is that something? Is that, yes? Good? Yes? Good? Yes?
Although we claim that we are Vaishnavas, sometimes it seems that in terms of performing our duties, it seems like we are mimamsakas. Because guna and karma match, as you explained, result is death.
Yeah.
And in terms of relationships, sometimes it looks like mayavad, because personal relationship, it's really difficult to relate.
We can't relate to relationships. Yeah, okay.
I mean, unless I'm in the center. That one.
Yeah, that works very nicely. Like you see, generally celebrities are probably quite good at their, you know, like that. And that yes. One you'll see is there'll be the underlying aspect of the, just the conditioning that I'm the controller and enjoyer. So unless we're, I mean, so all these things that means going to be that if we're convinced about something, we function at that level. So we have the five levels of consciousness. And so, generally speaking, devotees will be of philosophy, they'll be convinced on the spiritual platform. Right? You know, I mean, generally, you know, the transcendental, but at least the spiritual, the kind of go between these two platforms. So that's generally not a problem, because once you get talking about that, as long as you're not getting into other things, you don't touch on an issue, generally things go very well. But the difficulty comes up as issues, and those are going to be these, you know, social, economic, you know, psychological, and all these kind of aspects. Then it's going to be, depending upon the level of consciousness, they're going to be able to function there. So for our background, then it's basically we're, you know, you could say schooled in pranamoy. And that's considered an ideal. Because the tendency is anamoy. And then by, you know, education, by association and this, then you're supposed to develop some kind of pranamoyic view so that you can at least cooperate and work with others. Right. And so some are better at it, some not. Some better in the economics, some better in the justice, some better in the morality. You know, like this. So it depends on the individual or combinations. Very few, it's about the theistic points of laws of God. You know, so we may be accepting the laws of nature, but they're coming from pratyaksha, from us observing them, so they're part of anamoy. We're not accepting them because they come from Krishna, and that's the way it is. So from Krishna expands the creation, and so the first creation is the metaphysical. And then from that, then you get in the universe, then you get the gross. So that it functions in this way, and that's the way it is. Whether we're consciously accepting that or not, we may accept these aspects of morality, but it's because I've observed them or I see they work. I accept them, that's why they're good. Because something that, let's say, they're talking that this is how everything should work. Excuse me. That in the, with time, then it's not used anymore. What was the technique that made everything work really well previously? You know, ran very smoothly. Then now, somehow or another, it's not viable. Because it doesn't come up to the pranamoyic, let's say, the moral aspect. You know? And so we throw out we want economics. But you have to get the economics according to the moralistic platform that we've defined. And that definition is always changing. Does that make sense? That's why the material world can't be stable. Right? It means the Vedic system is more people producing, more people performing their duties means you produce more. So as there's more people, there's more stuff. So there's no such thing as inflation, because the more people doing duties, the more facilities there are. So it's just natural. The same facilities that you have was there with your father, with your grandfather, great grandfather, you know, like that, you know, back to, you know, how you say, you know, the whole thing, you know, Isaac, Moses, you know, the whole thing. So they all have the same thing, right? Does that make sense? You know, it means over these so many thousand, the sheep are still the same, right?
They still have it.
Yeah, they still have. They still bleat and they still give wool, right? So that's the it's just there. So there's no need. But in the modern, because it's constantly changing and all that, it's always a scarcity, right? So it means the market's driven by scarcity. If it's too much of it, the price goes down and no one wants that, because it's not about comfortable living for everybody. It's about themselves. So even though they talk pranamoy, it's not really. It's just enough pranamoy to hold it together, kind of barely. You know, because pranamoy, let's say, that would be, you know, the communities, like a commune and all that. That would be more of that kind of a thing. They're working more together and all that. You can have it on a grander scale, but does that make sense?
Yeah.
So it's only how much will be that you can get away with. So in other words, everybody else has to follow the rules, but if I don't, then as long as no one finds out, then it's okay. You know? So it's only when they get to that context of morality is governed by what God says, He, because it's his world, his laws, we're approaching the laws of nature as laws of God rather than laws of nature, meaning I perceived it. Does that make sense? And so then it's much broader, it's much deeper. Then you can figure out how you can fit in and all that. Of course, you know, false ego and all these kind of, you know, improper perception and misconception, doubt, all these things may create problems. And you still don't do things properly. But if you come in contact with the bona fide authorities, then you can be shown how that system works in context of Krishna. So then learning about the fifth level of consciousness, situating yourself on the fourth level, you know, that's goodness. And so that's the farthest you'll fall down is the goodness. And then from there you practice pure goodness. So like you said, sometimes it seems like we're mimamsakas, but you can be mimamsaka on that platform of the fourth level of consciousness. So you understand you're the soul, you're not the body. And so that's called then karma yoga. Right? Now if it's more mimamsa, you know, then it'll be sakam karma yoga. And if it's more the other way, the more spirit, then it'll be nishkam. So that will give you liberation. But as a devotee is not worried about liberation, then they continue forward to anandamaya. Is that?
Yeah.
Yeah. So you do have the element of the consciousness, because it's not just the one, there's a basic principle. But then you'll see is that they're all going to be looking at, if I do the right thing, I get the result I want. So dharmartha kama and moksha, then the senses, you have the right, you engage the senses properly, then you get the particular experience you're looking for. At least that's the theory. Or if you engage in the proper way, you get the facility, you do your dharma, you get artha. With that artha, now you can have karma. Karma, even you have all the thing. That's why the Vedic thing, it's not a problem. We're thinking that, no, if we have nothing, then that's the spiritual. It means we may not endeavor for more, that we have facility. That's not a problem for Krishna. You know, it's not a problem for Krishna. Because the thing is that if you're using intelligence, you have material facility. Material facility on its own can't compare because it's mundane. So the fanciest mundane facility won't be as nice as some simple Krishna conscious. Right? But when we're functioning outside of the Vedic system, then it's hit or miss whether we'll get anything, because we're not using a scientific system. Even where everybody's engrossed in the idea of sense gratification, are they following a system to get it?
No.
Right? Because it's not that just you want it, that's not enough. You actually have to do the thing in the context of whatever it is for it to be supplied. You know, it's like if I want vegetables, I have to go to that market. I want gold, I have to go to a different market. You know? And so just because I feel like it should happen, it's like, where does that come from? You know, it's like little kids, that's what they do in the backyard. They're out there, they're, you know, flying through space and, you know, doing all kinds of stuff. And, you know, for them it's cool. But you can't say that's an adult thing. So if you grow up like that and think, just because I want it, I should have it. Like, because kids, it's just how much comes in the mind is good enough. But the adults now want the tangible thing, but what's the connection? Where does it say that just because you think about it, you'll get it? I mean, they have a philosophy about that, right? But the point is that how does that work? They can say, no, I'm just thinking about it, and I will get it. But why would it work? Krishna says in the Gita that by contemplating the objects of senses, you develop attachment. Mm-hmm. Right? And what happens when you get attached? Now you're willing to work. So if I just sit there and just think, yes, I will do this, I think I'm drawing the thing. No, all you're doing is drawing yourself towards it. You get attached to it, now you're willing to, you know, get into the Pavarga stuff. You know? Like that. Because unless you're attached, Pavarga doesn't work. Yeah? Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's the difficulty, is that the living entity, unless he performs the duty, it's the duties that perform the artha. And so you see is that, yes, people are there. It means is that you have, it's God conscious and this and that, you know, and God we trust and all these kinds of things like that. But then as they move away from that, is where is the, you know, from being very, very economically powerful to being not a little bit less. You know, because there's some national car, but then with time it goes. Because you have to be cultivating it. You know, does that make sense? So, the basic point comes down to is that since it's about following God's laws and Dharma, and that will give Artha and Kama. And then what so is that? Then you can see is that it doesn't compare to the spiritual. Because a lot of times, like I said, we have to be convinced. You know? Like, I remember we were traveling in South India with Pancha Devita Maharaj and Akoyananda, yeah. So, in those days, there were no temples. So you just stayed at, you know, wealthy person's houses, you know, dharmshalas, temples, you know, stuff like that when you traveled. And so then, remember we were staying in some, I think in the mud was dharmshala. You know, simple as dharmshala means there's four walls and a floor and there's some water and there's a toilet. You know, and it's generally very open and airy and clean and light, you know, so it's nice. And we would cook, and when we'd be cooking, basically, since my cooking skills were very minimal, then, you know, getting khichdi together was, you know, was doing good. That was good. You know, and then you're thinking about, you know, then we'd go out, you'd be making members and all this, and so people would invite you to their houses, and they, you know, in those days, they cooked very well. That, you know, it still was, you know, people thought cooking was a good thing. You know, it wasn't like now is that, you know, how you say, Domino's pizza, now that's the cat's meow. No, before then it was, you know, what your mom and grandmother cooked, that was real food. Right? And then, the perfection of how they would cook and the this and that, it was all like perfect as far as culinary technique went. But after like two or three days of those programs, we wanted to eat the khichdi. Not because it was too heavy, it's too this, it's too that. Because means you walk around all day carrying a 20 kilo bag full of books to make a member. You don't have a problem with digesting the lunch. You know, in India there's no lifts, so you walk up. You know, the guy's up on the top. You know, seven floors up. You know, it's like that. You know, so no problem for there. But the thing was is it was because of the consciousness that's there. It's offered to Krishna, the prasad. You could see the difference. Right? Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So that's one of the aspects of the Vedic system. Krishna doesn't mind that you have facility. It's just that you should be using your intelligence to use it in his service and to be able to tell the difference between what's mundane and what's spiritual. Because that's real knowledge. All other things are considered ignorance. You know, it doesn't mean that you can't have variety and ignorance and be able to tell all the different parts of it. You know. But it doesn't make it real knowledge. So that's the whole point is you have all these things, but still they're just going to be about Krishna. Like you said before, is that may have been in TLC. This was here. Where is that... For the devotee, the neophyte devotee, then he gets, you know, something from, you know, he gets things from Krishna or not. It's according to what will make him remember Krishna. But then the advanced devotees, they get facilities from Krishna. They're always, remember how kind Krishna is, that he's arranging these things. So it just makes them more Krishna conscious. While the neophyte, they may become Krishna conscious, but they may get distracted. So then it's about what you require for all of it. You have to take care of the body, the mind, the words, and the consciousness. So we just look at the first three, but generally not even that much. Right? So, you know, the body, the senses, and our emotions, you know. Intelligence we may or may not look at, and consciousness, you know, that's, you know. I say once a week when we go to the temple, right? Like that. Yeah. So that becomes the difficulty, is that Krishna's taking care of the whole thing. Because we're the soul, not the body. So the body comes along with it. It means if you're still in the body, it's been taken care of. You know, if you find you're not in the body, then now it's yes, then there's some difficulty there. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Does that work? So one always has to consider the levels of consciousness when you're considering, because different people have different things. So what they're trying to do, right? So in other words, the person on anamoy is trying to remove the obstacles for his sense gratification. Right, an artist is trying to remove the obstacles for getting more facility. Dharma for performance of duty. Right? So they're not looking about, they're not worried about the other things. They perform the duty, because from dharma will come artha, and then with artha you can, the sense gratification is there. It just comes anyway. Does that make sense? You, like when you go and buy something in the modern shops, it comes with a package. You don't buy the package separately. So, you know, does that make sense?
Yeah,
so it just comes along with it. So as there on Vijnanamoy, then the obstacles to understanding things from the platform of the soul, that we're the soul, and you know how to be properly engaged in the sadhana and things like that, and not get distracted by the other levels. And Anandamaya, then it's about removing the obstacles for Krishna's pleasure. Right, so the other levels don't have that aspect of Krishna's pleasure on the mundane platform. But as devotees, even we have areas of consciousness there, but if we're trying to connect that to Krishna, it will get purified. And then we come up. So because we're able to use it doesn't mean that it's the place to work from. Right? It means that it's the standard. It means for me right now, let's say, you know, someone is in a particular position and due to a particular attachment, then you're going to be engaging that attachment in Krishna's service. And in that way, then it becomes bona fide. But now to say that this is the process that everybody should be following, that's bogus. Because there's the general rules, and then you'll apply it into your situation. So it's not the standard that devotees on the platform of Vijnanamaya, you know, then being absorbed in Anandamaya, are going to socially function on the platform of Pranamaya. It's just you don't see in Bhagavatam or anywhere anybody doing that, because it's so inefficient. Because if you want a social strata, you have to have something that will make sense to all living entities. And so the only thing that makes sense to all living entities is the platform of the soul and the relationship of the soul with God and the creation being related to God. In other words, the Sambandha Gyan. So that's universal. And so understanding that, now everybody can be engaged. But otherwise, if we work on Pranamoy, we're going to say it's universal. But I can only associate with other people who say it's universal, even though it only applies specifically to the particular social group that we're in. Right? Does that make sense? You know, you've gone to, you know, college educated, this kind of thing, you know, and that kind of aspect, and sitting around in, you know, cafes with nothing to do and talking about all these things. And so that kind of thing, then you do. If someone's from another group, they don't fit in. Does that make sense? So it's not universal. It's just that you feel that universalness. But where's the universality coming from? It's coming from Krishna. But we're dealing with Krishna, not seeing it's Krishna. You know, just like everything. Every karma is working with Krishna, but they don't see it's Krishna. He likes his house. He's comfortable in his house. He feels secure in his house. But the security of the house is Krishna. The comfortableness of the house is Krishna. Right? But they don't see it as Krishna, so it's just a house. The devotee sees it connected to Krishna. So, using Pranamoy, you just don't see in history devotees using it. Right? So it's not standard at all. It means like zero. But if one is situated in Pranamoy, you would use it in Krishna's service. But it only is valuable for use in Krishna's service as long as you're stuck on that platform of consciousness. But as soon as you get purified and move up, you would give it up. Does that make sense? You know, it's just like you're on the ground and you want to go up the stairs. So now from the ground, where do you place your step? Where's the first step go? Your foot goes on where?
The first
riser, right? Yeah. The first step there. So your first step goes on the first step. Yeah, okay, okay. Yes. That's how you work it out. Yeah. Yeah. Okay, yeah. Yeah. You know, and you know what is that? Put your best foot forward. You know, so. Yeah.
Yes.
Look, so you start with your right foot. Right?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
So that goes there. Okay, now you're on the ground. Right? And if you're supposed to be on the first floor, being on the ground isn't ideal. Right? Especially if lunch is served on the first floor. Then it would not be considered prosperous or auspicious to be on the ground floor. Right? So now you're going to take that first step. Then what's the next thing you do?
Take the next step.
The next step. So the second, you know, step on the second step, right? Right? Now, to take that second step, you're already situated on the first. Can you move to the next step if you're not situated on the first step? No. When you're solid on that, then you can take your foot that's on the ground and move that to the second step. Right? So now you're on the first and second. So now your lowest standard is the first step. Then you're situated on the second. Now you can move that foot up to the third. Yes. That's how spiritual life works. That's how everything works. Just the mechanics of it works like that. So unless you appreciate that, that's how it functions. Now, if you think, well, I use engaged being on the ground in Krishna's service, so therefore, you know, we're all on the ground, and so it's artificial to say anybody's here and there, so, you know, let's be realistic, Prabhu, and we'll all just sit on the ground, and we won't even bother with the stairs, because, you know, hey, we didn't invent stairs, you know, all we have is caves, clubs, and we hit girls over the head and drag them home by the hair, you know? Like that. We heard about some guy in the next, you know, how you say, village over, that he started this fire and all this kind of thing, but we're not really sure about it. Right? So, therefore, we have to be able to move forward. And so, if we're going to take our lower consciousness as a standard, then for others, that will be a bogus philosophy, a bogus practice. But if we're on that platform, and then we learn how to engage it in Krishna's service, then it gets purified, then we're able to go up to the next step. Does that make sense? And then we're situated, we keep on moving. Mm-hmm. So that's the whole thing, until we're rightly situated. Because if we're in Pranamoy, that's not rightly situated. Mm-hmm. Right? Because human life begins at Manamoy, at accepting it's God's laws, that we follow the laws. Because they're God's laws. You know, it may be that modern science has also noticed it, then great. It just makes it that much easier to follow. It means if the karmis also accept laws that we accept, it makes it easier for our life. Right? So it's fine. But if they don't accept, it doesn't mean we don't follow it, because they work anyway, because they're eternal laws. Does that make sense? No?
Yeah.
Yeah. So that has to be understood, is that, yes, temporarily we may use a lower standard of, or lower quality of something to use in Krishna's service, in the way of the consciousness, or the engagement of the senses, or the emotions, or like this kind of aspect, or how we situate the body. But it doesn't mean that we're not, by being purified, we're not willing to go forward. That's what it means by the tenth offense, is that we are pure, we could move forward, but we don't, because we're attached. Because it doesn't mean that you're attached, therefore it's the tenth offense. It means you're attached to your attachment. Right? We have attachments. That happens. But to be attached to the attachments, the material attachments, that's not good. And then to make a philosophy to defend that and say it's all right and we're Westerners and this, but how do you define Westerners? You know? Like I said, I was in Sydney, sitting in, you know, traffic there, downtown, right? Sitting in the car, and we're stopped at, you know, the light, and you have this, the you know, what do you, the crosswalk. Mm-hmm. And people are downtown, so people walk, because, you know, there's no parking, there's no nothing, right? So they're all walking. And out of literally 18 out of 20 people that would cross were not white Australians. Literally. 9 out of 10 are not. That's downtown. You know, because if you, why I say that is because only a few years ago, Australia gave up their policy of white. They had a policy. Only whites could come into Australia. Like that. You know, they talk about South Africa, the apartheid, and this and that. That, but that was, they were there. Australia just didn't let them in. You know, if you were from Asia anyway. If you weren't like from England or, you know, for, they just didn't let you in.
Yeah.
You know? And then they gave that up, so now they have from it. But it's the predominance is not. Look, if you go out into the village, then maybe. But the cities, so there's so much of it. So this whole idea is that we say we're Westerners. One would have to work really hard to define that. Seeing that those people that are there from China, that are there from India and all that, they're in Australia, and they're eating Chinese food, and they're eating Indian food, that they're cooking right there. And amazingly, they're not dying. You know, it's not that, you know, you're going to only eat that in India. If you eat it anywhere else, then you'll die. And they follow the same cultural things with the family, the community, and all that. And they have money, they have community, they do very well. So this whole idea is that, oh, we're Westerners, we have an excuse. No, you don't. You don't. So we have to be very, very careful to use these kind of things and then think that it's being... Because the point is we're saying, who says these stuff? Generally, you know, we're Westerners, we don't need to follow all this Vedic stuff. Generally, it's those that claim they're liberals. But if you reject culture, can you call yourself liberal? Would anybody who's actually from a liberal, you know, like community, would they accept that that person's liberal? You know, if you're anti-culture, culture is culture. You know? So that's the thing. It wouldn't be accepted. So those aren't Westerners. You know, they're people who have a very narrow-minded idea of what culture they want to follow or what activities, and so that's that. But they can't say they represent the Western world. Does that make sense? You know, so that's the difficulty, is that we have to be very, very careful. Just because we're conditioned by it, that's natural. We're going to start there. We're going to be conditioned by it. But we can't claim that that's now the standard. You know, unless Shastra tells us that, you know, it mentions a shloka that mentions our name, born here, and our father and mother, and which hospital we were born in, and that, you know, they're going to set the standard for, you know, how Westerners are going to be able to practice spiritual life. Then, okay, that we could begin this conversation then. You're mentioning Shastras and incarnation, that's what you're doing, then we're okay. But otherwise, then there's a problem with it. And we said, so all it is that one gets stuck in this pranamoyic level of consciousness, and then somehow another one thinks that it's the same as the fifth level. But if they're the same, why give it two different names? Right? It doesn't make sense. That's not logical. You give it two different names because there's a difference. Right? It's consciousness, but there's variety within consciousness. You know, and this idea is simply because I doubt, therefore I am. You know, but what about, okay, you can doubt, but can you actually properly apprehend things? Because if you can't actually grasp the reality of something, you can only find fault in it, then is that really, you know, it's different? When I mentioned a story one time, we were, you know, not far from the temple, we're about, let's say, like 2 blocks away from the temple. Maybe a little more, but not far. And there was at that time on that street a racket in that area, a racket of you know, guys going through the street. They'd let out the air in your tire when you'd go. And then when you come back, you have the flat tire, and they'll offer to fix your tire. You know, change the tire and do all that for you. So there was this devotee who knew that racket was going on, so he wasn't going to get part of it. So then he just got in the car and started driving off. You know how cars with a flat tire, because when it's flat, they make sure it's really flat. They don't just let it out so it's a little lower than normal or not good. They make it completely flat, you know, like, you know, falling off the rim flat. You know? So we're driving along. You know, you can't go much more than like 5-10 kilometers an hour, like that. And the wheel wobbles and all that. And then, you know, we're talking Calcutta. And Calcutta means you're going to have all kinds of four-legged living entities on the street. And now dogs, they have their territory and all that. And, you know, they've seen what's there and what, you know, comes through. And normal cars go through. They're cool because that's what it is. But one of these cars go through with this wobbly, weird tire like that. They're totally freaking out. They're just, they're all of them there, like completely, like, you know, fear and everything in their eye. And they're all there close to it, you know, where that wheel is. And they're all there barking and going along with us, you know, until their territory ends. And once we leave their territory, they don't care. But the whole point is that's the mentality. You can't call that a liberal mentality. Does that make sense? So to claim that if I don't think it's normal, it's not normal. Then you know, even Pranamoy, you're stretching it to say that that's where it is. You know what I'm saying? But if you get a few people to agree with you, then it's cool. So we actually have to understand, even when we say Western, we're sophisticated and this and that, just because you're sophisticated doesn't mean you're cultured. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? You know, it's just like here, the pumps here, the toilets here. But have you ever seen the drains clogged where, you know, your pump, your water is backing up and going everywhere and stuff? Here? No. Why? Because it's an open drain. That's simple. Now you have the closed drains and those little, you know, things and grills and different things that you can do, you know, to make it like that. That's sophisticated or complicated. So in the modern, complicated is called sophisticated. But in the Vedic, sophisticated just means it's simple but done in a refined way. And if it's simple but in unrefined ways, then that's just simple. So they complicate things and consider that is sophisticated. What do you think? You think they can give lectures for BJP and they'd be happy? Yeah? Okay. So yeah, so does that make sense? Once they actually asked me to go on a tour with them.
What is the Vedic definition of sophistication?
Didn't I just say it? The definition of sophistication?
That is simple. Sophistication in modern is complex.
Didn't I say refined?
Yes. Yeah, but what is refined then? I just want to understand it. So I'm not getting it.
Refined. I think the general thing would be not gross. So it's done in a more, let's say, with more cultural aspects. The simple will just be a straightforward way, the easiest way you can get it done. While the refined would be, it would have that element to it, but you would make it more nice. You add art to it and stuff like that. Does that make sense? Yeah.
Elegant,
yeah, that could work. These kind of things. So then that's the Vedic thing. So it always works. It'll always work anywhere. So this idea, it won't work anywhere else, it'll always work. That's the thing. So for devotees, then they don't have to worry that the culture that's been given by Prabhupada and the Acharyas won't work. It'll always work. Right? It'll always work. But the difficulty comes down is that due to our conditioning, we'll think it doesn't work. So when we say it won't work for Westerners, means I can't relate to it. To say that it won't work for Westerners, that's a pretty big stretch to say you represent all Westerners. Right? Does that make sense? Because it's like so many things are going on in a city that you as an individual don't go to, have no interest in, but there's plenty of people who are going to them. Does that make sense? So there's a whole thing. You know, there'll be websites, there'll be magazines on all things that we ourselves don't do in the West. So, you know, we've never even heard of them, but they're all there. Does that make sense? So that's the principle, is that these aspects of the culture, they're there just to support the spiritual. They're not there for any other purpose. But now being there, they just generate the facilities that you'll use, right? Primary means it's being done to please Krishna. Secondary means the knowledge and skills working with the mechanics of the secondary. Right? So the secondary maintains the secondary. Does that make sense? That's what it does. So the idea is then, for the devotees, then you'll use that secondary and the techniques of the secondary that Krishna recommends. Because in the spiritual world, they're using the secondary. So this idea that the spiritual world, they won't know what's going on in the material world. What do you mean? It's the same mechanics. In fact, they know it even better. You know, it's like we're going through nectar devotion, and they're breaking down all the things that cause relationship in that. Like that. Modern wouldn't be able to explain all that. So it's just so much more sophisticated. So if we accept that, and we accept to perform our duties, right, in connection with Krishna, you know, for his pleasure, then we'll see is that all these material necessities are taken care of. Because the only reason for them to not be there is either there's something in ourselves that we will not be able to deal with, because we'll get distracted, or because then we may be in a position where Krishna is setting an example for others. You know, does that make sense? You know, so like Arjuna, then you know he's becoming bewildered. So it's something for others, right? You know, or Parikshit Maharaj is asking questions for others, like that. Because for himself, then, you know, like it said, he himself could counter, he's a pure devotee, he could counteract the curse of a Brahmin. Now, the Brahmin's a materialist. Yes. So they actually can't deal with devotees. So as a pure devotee, he would be able to counter that. But because Krishna had arranged it, he didn't. And so then in that arrangement, then we see that all the sages of the whole universe came together to hear the recitation of Srimad Bhagavatam. So then, you know, how perfect it is. So that's why they're not worried, because they're, you know, it's like everything works so nicely. Does that make sense? So that way then we judge and we see is that here Jagannath Mishra is just performing his duties very nicely. And because it's all in connection with the Supreme Lord, therefore then other devotees are appreciating that, even the non-devotees, and then they're supporting that. Does that make sense? Okay. We're good. Sachi Mata told her husband, "I see wonderfully brilliant human beings appearing in outer space, as if offering prayers." Srila Prabhupada, Jagannath Mishra is honored by everyone on the earth and was supplied with all necessities. Similarly, Mother Sachi saw many demigods in outer space offering prayers to her because of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's presence in her womb. 1.13.84-86 Jagannath Mishra then replied, "In a dream, I saw the effulgent abode of the Lord enter my heart. From my heart it entered your heart. Therefore I understand that a great personality will soon take birth." After this conversation, both husband and wife were very jubilant, and together they rendered service to the household Shaligram Srila. Srila Prabhupada, "Especially in every Brahmana's house, there must be a Shaligram Srila to be worshipped by the Brahmana family. This system is still current. People who are Brahmanas by caste, who are born in a Brahmana family, must worship the Shaligram Srila. Unfortunately, with the progress of Kali Yuga, the so-called Brahmanas, although very proud of taking birth in Brahmin families, no longer worship the Shaligram Srila. But actually, it has been a custom since time immemorial that a person born in a Brahmin family must worship the Shaligram Srila in all circumstances. In our Krishna conscious society, some of the members are very anxious to introduce worship of the Shaligram Srila, but we have purposely refrained from introducing it because most of the members of the Hare Krishna movement do not originally come from families of the Brahmana caste. After some time, when we find that they are actually situated strictly in the line of Brahminical behavior, Shaligram Srila worship will be introduced. Right? So Prabhupada's point is it will be introduced, but you have to have that Brahminical nature. So we saw is that then Prabhupada went so long, and then he introduced it here in Mayapur. I think it was, what would that have been? It may have been 75. Like that. So then, I can't remember how it worked out, but someone had arranged from some Brahmin somewhere, some temple, I think, a Shaligram Srila. They brought it to the Calcutta temple, and then from Calcutta, then it was taken out to Mayapur, to Jananivas, and then Prabhupada showed him how to worship it, and then that worship has been going on. And then from there, then it spreads. So it's about Brahminical nature. So Brahminical nature means, said what we were saying before, is acceptance of the duties, the laws that are there, the rules that are there, and that this is Krishna's rules, and that's how Krishna likes it. So because of that, then it will work very nicely. Because otherwise, then, if we want to whimsically do whatever we want, we can say, in other words, we want the Shaligram Srila worship because it's higher, but we don't want to put in the effort. You know, and then we want that thing, but then, you know, Giriraj is higher than that, but then, you know, with Giriraj, we don't actually, there's no rules, so then we can do whatever we want. So it actually just comes back to us. You know, like we were saying before, it just comes back down to these, it's not about the manamoy, that's the rules. Or, you know, it means just that's, the Brahman at a minimum follows it because that's the rules. But we see is that we do it, we want to adjust it for ourselves. Mm-hmm. You know, it's one thing you adjust according to your situation, that's fine. But when we just adjust because, you know, we're lazy or, you know, we can't relate to it. So that's what Prabhupada's talking about. As we get purified, then naturally to be introduced, when devotees can relate to it, do everything very nicely and all that. In this age, the worship of the Shaligram Srila is not as important as the chanting of the holy name of the Lord. That is the injunction of the Shastra. Hare Nama, Hare Nama, Hare Nama, Eva Kevalam. Kalo Nasjeva, 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 Gatya Nanyata. Srila Jiva Goswami's opinion is that by chanting the holy name offenselessly, one becomes completely perfect. Nevertheless, just to purify the situation of the mind, worship of the deity in the temple is also necessary. Right? So, just chanting is enough, but to purify the mind, and that then it's also important. You know, as a support for the chanting. Therefore, when one is advanced in spiritual consciousness or is perfectly situated on a spiritual platform, he may take to the worship of Shaligram Srila. So basically from the platform of Vijnana Maya, that is the spiritual, then you could that's as a minimum form you can function in that case. Because Brahman means one who knows Brahman, because Shaligram Srila is directly Brahman. The transference of the Lord from the heart of Jagannath Mishra to the heart of Sachimata is explained by Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur as follows. Quote, it is to be concluded that Jagannath Mishra and Sachimata are nitya siddhas, ever pure associates of the Lord. Their hearts are always uncontaminated, and therefore they never forget the Supreme Personality of Godhead. A common man in this material world has a contaminated heart. He must therefore first purify his heart to come to the transcendental position. But Jagannath Mishra and Sachimata were not a common man and woman with contaminated hearts. When the heart is uncontaminated, it is said to be in the existential position of Vasudeva. Vasudeva can beget Vasudeva, or Krishna, who is transcendentally situated. So unless you're on the platform of Vasudeva, then how do you get the Lord? Because he's on that platform. It is to be understood that Sachidevi did not become pregnant as an ordinary woman becomes pregnant because of sense indulgence. One should not think the pregnancy of Sachimata to be that of an ordinary woman, because that is an offense. One can understand the pregnancy of Sachimata when one is actually advanced in spiritual consciousness and fully engaged in devotional service to the Lord. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur next quotes Sripad Baladev Vidyabhushana, Who, but we see here is that it's with the devotees. So the husband and wife, because of their devotional mood and the purity of the heart, then they have that this conception through this meditation on the Lord.
Yes.
All right? Does that make sense? So we see that would be the general standard. Nowadays, this concept is used, but they leave the husband kind of out of it. You know? And so then he's not a major factor.
Yes.
Does that make sense? No?
Yes.
Because it's just, how you say, it just happens. I mean, it only happened once, of course, right? You know. You got it? Nazareth,
oh yeah.
You know what I'm saying? But, you know, Joseph wasn't really part of the whole scene. You know, he's just, you know, paying the bills, right? So.
Right.
Yeah, but we're seeing here that it's the husband and wife because of their Krishna consciousness. Right? But they're, as pointed out, they're Nitya Siddhas, so this is how it works. Like that. But the point being is the God consciousness. Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, next quote, Sripad Baladeva Dibhushan, who refers to the prayers offered by the demigods to Lord Krishna in the womb of Devaki, and summarizes the birth of Krishna as follows. Quote, as a rising moon manifests light in the east, so Devaki, who is always situated on the transcendental platform, having been initiated in the Krishna mantra by Vasudeva, the son of Surasena, kept Krishna within her heart. End quote. From this statement of Srimad Bhagavatam 10.2.18, it is understood that the Supreme Personality of Godhead, having been transferred from the heart of Anaka Dundavi, or Vasudeva, manifested himself in the heart of Devaki. According to Srila Baladeva Vidyabhushan, quote, the heart of Devaki means the womb of Devaki, because in Srimad Bhagavatam 10.2.41, the demigods say, Drishtyam bha te kukshi gata paraf puman. Mother Devaki, the Lord is already within your womb. Therefore, that the Lord was transferred from the heart of Vasudeva to the heart of Devaki means that he was transferred to the womb of Devaki. Similarly, in regard to the appearance of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, as described in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, the words Visheshe Sevana Kare Govinda Charan, quote, they specifically began to worship the lotus feet of Govinda, end quote, indicate that exactly as Krishna appeared in the heart of Devaki through the heart of Vasudeva, so Lord Chaitanya appeared in the heart of Sachidevi through the heart of Jagannath Misra. This is the mystery of the appearance of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. We see here is that's why Sachimata and Jagannath Misra will be Nanda and Jashoda, but they'll also be Vasudeva and Devaki. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
You know, and then there'll also be, you know, how you say, Prishni and Sutapa, and, you know, all the, because wherever they are, you know, Kasyapa and Aditi. Mm-hmm. So they still represent, because all those aspects are there, and you see the Lord will, in his pastimes, deal with all the different devotees. So that's why it's just, that's how it's working in this pastime. So it's a you know, a special arrangement, because it's way to dream. So it'll have elements that'll be it'll be Braj and then beyond.
Mm-hmm.
So in other words, how Braj is connecting to all the realms.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah. This is the mystery of the appearance of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Consequently, one should not think of Lord Chaitanya's appearance as that of a common man or living entity. The subject matter is a little difficult to understand, but for devotees of the Lord, it will not at all be difficult to realize the statements given by Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami. 113.87-90. In this way, the pregnancy approached its 13th month, but still there was no sign of the delivery of the child. Thus, Jagannath Misra became very apprehensive. Nilambar Chakravarti, the grandfather of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, then did an astrological calculation that said that in that very month, taking advantage of an auspicious moment, the child would take birth. Thus, in the year 1407 of the Shaka era, AD 1486, in the month of Falgun, February, March, in the evening in the full moon day, the desired auspicious moment arrived. According to the Jyotirveda, Vedic astrology, the auspicious birth moment is described as follows. The moon was in Leo, the figure of the lion in the zodiac. Leo was the ascendant. Several planets were strongly positioned, and the Shadvarga and Astavarga showed all auspicious influences. You got that?
Doesn't mean anything.
No?
Not at all. I mean, Leo is an ascendant, yes, everything is.
But it also has the moon in Leo.
Yeah.
Srila Prabhupada. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, who was previously a great astrologer, explains this verse as follows. The Shadvarga, six divisions, are technically called Kshetra, Hora, Dreikarna, Navamsa, Vadasamsa, and Trimshamsa. According to the Jyotirvedic astrology, when the relationship between the planets and the rulers of these six divisions is determined, the auspiciousness of the moment of birth can be calculated. In the book named Brihaj Jataka and other books, there are directions for interpreting the movements of the stars and planets. One who knows the process of calculating the Astavarga, eight divisions, can predict auspicious and inauspicious events. This science is known especially by persons who are called Hora Shastravit, or those who know the astrological scriptures. On the strength of astrological calculations from the Hora scriptures, Nilambar Chakravarti, the grandfather of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, had ascertained the auspicious moment when the Lord would appear. 1.13.91.92. When the spotless moon of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu became visible, what would be the need for a moon full of black marks on its body? Considering this, Rahu, the black planet, covered the full moon, and immediately vibrations of Krishna, Krishna, Hari inundated the three worlds. Right, so Rahu's thinking, Lord Chaitanya is coming, what do we need this moon for? So, Srila Prabhupada, according to the Jyotirveda, a lunar eclipse takes place when the Rahu planet comes in front of the full moon. It is customary in India that all the followers of the Vedic scriptures bathe in the Ganges, or the sea, as soon as there is a lunar or solar eclipse. All strict followers of the Vedic religion stand up in the water throughout the whole period of the eclipse and chant the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. At the time of the birth of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, such a lunar eclipse took place, and naturally all the people standing in the water were chanting Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. 1.13.93-99. All the people thus chanted the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra during the lunar eclipse, and their minds were struck with wonder. When the whole world was thus chanting the holy name of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, in the form of Gaurahari, advented himself on the earth. The whole world was pleased. While the Hindus, because that's one of the symptoms, when you install the deity, the Hari Bhakti Vilas will tell that there are symptoms to see if, you know, the installation went well. You know, the deity was happy to come. So one of them is just, there's this peaceful atmosphere. Everybody's very satisfied. Right? So then this is showing here. When he appeared, everybody's very satisfied. Yes?
Once one Vedic astrologer told that when Marx was born, creator of communism theory, it was lunar eclipse. And it's evident that his birth has a negative influence on our civilization. And I want to ask, lunar eclipse, is it a bad or good factor itself?
It's not considered an auspicious time. That's why then you are chanting and all that. So, because everyone is chanting and doing kirtan, Lord Chaitanya appearing at that time, that's the specialty.
Because of chanting.
Yes. But the lunar eclipse is not specifically that great. You know what I'm saying? It means you wouldn't choose that as the, you know, the time to start doing something. Like that. So, yeah.
Now there's a new concoction that the most inauspicious period is between solar and lunar eclipses. The corridor between that time, what, you know, like it happens, you know, almost every year, that period of time between the eclipses, it's very inauspicious. But apparently it's a speculation. It's not mentioned, you know, Parashara, Hora Shastra, or anything.
means one always has to appreciate that, the ability to find something that's, you know, has that kind of, what do you call it, you know, doomsday kind of taste to it is always very pleasurable to, you know, it goes in line with conspiracies, and that is part of fearing. You know, so, okay, for this, and that's coming here, then for 2 months, and this and that, and, oh, no, what are we going to do? Because it just cultivates fearing. So you probably see those that get into that also probably get into conspiracies. And, you know, anything that will create fear. So the point is that if you're engaged in devotional service, why would it affect you? It may have some effect on the environment around you, but if you're unaffected by the environment, how has it affected you? You know, if there's an eclipse and you're chanting Hare Krishna, how is this affecting you? Does that make sense? So that's why we understand it. We have the certain things that it uses for. So it means that by knowing these things, you know, you can calculate certain things like that. But if you take it that these are creating the auspiciousness, no, they're only a sign that it'll be there. Just like omens, you see something. It's just indicating what it will be. It's not creating it. You're going out, someone comes with a bucket of water. It's not that seeing that now has created that good fortune. It's just showing you that it'll be good. So it's not that, oh, now I can, you know, if it wasn't, then I can, you know, turn around or, how you say, stand on my head or take my shoes off, put them back on or, you know, how you say, you know, whatever it is that one wants to do. You know, like the drivers, you know, then they stop the car and put an X and back up and do all that kind of, all this just showing is what's going to happen. You know what I'm saying? So, you know, it's like looking on the internet if the shop will be open or not. It's not that when you look at it, it says that it's closed, you know, when you're going to get there, you know, because of a bank holiday or something. It's not that by, you know, turning off the phone and turning it back on and then, you know, putting it in the other pocket and then, you know, sitting in the seat backwards and then looking at it, now it'll say, oh, now it's open. It's just indicating what's going on. Does that make sense? Yeah, so... So this idea is, oh no, if I do this, then it'll change it. No, it doesn't. The whole world was pleased. While the Hindus chanted the holy name of the Lord, the non-Hindus, especially the Muslims, jokingly imitated the words. Right? So they would be there, because everybody's in the water, you know, chanting all day, and they're going to... You know, it's kind of like, you know, these guys chanting Hare Krishna. So they're also chanting. That's the glory of Lord Chaitanya, is that. So we're thinking, oh, no, they'll mock us. Yeah, but they'll mock us with what? You know, if people want to mock us, what do they say? They'll say, hey, Hare Krishna, you know, like that. They're not going to say, oh, you know, you go to your Vaishnavas and the Brahma Madhva line, you know. They're not going to say that. I had once one guy say something like that, and I didn't know why it was, you know, I was kind of, you know, what's the angle? He says, I was just trying to be technically correct. Oh, okay, cool, okay, nice. You know, some academic or something. While all the ladies vibrated the holy name of Hare on earth, in the heavenly planets, dancing and music were going on. For the demigods were very curious, right? Because the Lord's appearing, they want to see what's going to happen. In this atmosphere, all the 10 directions became jubilant, as did the waves of the rivers. Right, everything becomes very peaceful. Moreover, all beings, moving and non-moving, were overwhelmed with transcendental bliss. Thus, by his causeless mercy, the full moon, Gaurahari, rose in the district of Nadia, which is compared to Udayagiri, where the sun first becomes visible. His rising in the sky dissipated the darkness of sinful life. Okay, so it first comes up on Udayagiri. That's far up. Where's Udayagiri? Anyone knows? It's one of those names you always hear. But
it says district of Nadia. It rose in the district of Nadia. So maybe another district should be
Udayagiri. No, which is compared to Udayagiri. So Udayagiri will be a big mountain, so you might see that first. So it'll be in a particular place where you can see. Because the sun comes up onto the planet from here first. It comes up on Bengal and that, so, but it may be higher up in the Himalayas. You can still see it first or something along one of these other. But the point is, it comes here first, then goes around like that. Then it eventually gets to Mount Warden. His rising in the sky dissipated the darkness of sinful life. Right, so it rose, which is compared to Udaigiri, because that's the first place you can see the sun. So then he rose; it was first visible in Nadia. His rising in the sky dissipated the darkness of sinful life, and thus the three worlds became joyful and chanted the holy name of the Lord. At that time, Sri Advaita Charya Prabhu, in his own house at Shantipur, was dancing in a pleasing mood, taking Haridas Thakur with him. He danced and loudly chanted Hare Krishna. But why they were dancing, no one could understand. Srila Prabhupada. It is understood that Advaita Prabhu at that time was in his own paternal house at Shantipur. Haridas Thakur frequently used to meet him. Coincidentally, therefore, he was also there, and upon the birth of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, both of them immediately began to dance. But no one in Shantipur could understand why these two saintly persons were dancing. But, you know, smart is whether they're going to, they're not going to catch it, right? 113-100. Seeing the lunar eclipse and laughing, Advaita Charya and Haridas Thakur immediately went to the bank of the Ganges and bathed in the river in great jubilation. Taking advantage of the occasion of the lunar eclipse, Advaita Charya, by his mental strength, distributed various types of charity to the Brahmins. Srila Prabhupada, it is the custom of Hindus to give in charity to the poor as much as possible during the time of a lunar or solar eclipse. Advaita Charya, therefore, taking advantage of this eclipse, distributed many varieties of charity to the Brahmins. In Srimad Bhagavatam 10.3.11, there's a statement that when Krishna took his birth, Vasudeva immediately took advantage of this moment and distributed 10,000 cows to the Brahmanas. It is customary among Hindus that at the time a child is born, especially a male child, the parents distribute great charity and jubilation. Right, because one may say, okay, when the boys, they give them the charity. As the boy will stay, one may say, well, why not for the girl? Because you keep that money. And then when she gets older, that's given to her. Yeah. So everybody gets, just they have their way. Advaita Charya was actually interested in distributing charity because of Lord Chaitanya's birth at the time of the lunar eclipse. So it wasn't because of the lunar eclipse he was giving. But by him giving charity at that time, people will think it's normal. But he was actually giving it because of the appearance of Lord Chaitanya. People could not understand. However, why Advaita Charya was giving so much great variety of things in charity? Because they just thought it's a lunar eclipse, you know, you just do a little something, you know, a coconut, dhoti, you know, that kind of thing. He did so not because of the lunar eclipse, because of the Lord's taking birth at that moment. He distributed charity exactly as Vasudeva did at the time of Lord Krishna's appearance.
So he was the only one to know?
Fear so him and Haridas Thakur. I'm sure the news will get there, but at this point, only they knew. 113-101-106. When he saw that the whole world was jubilant, Haridas Thakur, his mind astonished, directly and indirectly expressed himself to Advaita Charya. Quote, "Your dancing and distributing charity are very pleasing to me. I can understand that there is some special purpose in these actions." End quote. Charya Ratna, Chandrasekhar, and Srivas Thakur were overwhelmed with joy, and immediately they went to the bank of the Ganges to bathe in the waters. Their minds full of happiness, they chanted the Hare Krishna mantra and gave charity by mental strength. In this way, all the devotees, wherever they were situated, in every city and every country, danced, performed Sankirtan, and gave charity by mental strength on the plea of the lunar eclipse, their minds overwhelmed with joy. All sorts of respectable Brahmin gentlemen and ladies carrying plates filled with various gifts came with their presentations. Seeing the newborn child, whose form resembled natural glaring gold, all of them happily offered their blessings. Dressing themselves as the wives of Brahmins, all the celestial ladies, including the wives of Lord Brahma, Lord Shiva, Lord Nrisingadev, wow, King Indra and Vishishta Rishi, along with Rumba, a dancing girl of heaven, came there with varieties of gifts. Rumba is one of the main five. Like that. so she also came. I think Rumba's
wife of Nalakuvara.
Yeah, Nalakuvara. Yeah.
And who's the wife of Nrsimha?
Well, Lakshmi Devi. Also sometimes being known as Nrsimhi. Yeah. There are some depictions where she has a head of a lion also. You know, it must be for some fun that they do that. But otherwise, generally not. In outer space, all the demigods, including the inhabitants of Gandharva Loka, Siddha Loka, and Charna Loka, offered their prayers and danced to the accompaniment of music, songs, and the beating of drums. Similarly, in Navadvip city, all the professional dancers, musicians, and blessers gathered together, dancing in great jubilation. Srila Prabhupada, as there are professional singers, dancers, and reciters of prayers in the heavenly planets, so in India still there are professional dancers, blessers, and singers, all of them whom assemble together during household ceremonies, especially marriages and birth ceremonies. These professional men earn their livelihood by taking charity on such occasions from the homes of the Hindus. Eunuchs also take advantage of such ceremonies to receive charity. That is their means of livelihood. Such men never become servants or engage themselves in agriculture or business occupations. They simply take charity from the neighborhood friends to maintain themselves peacefully. The Bhattas are a class of Brahmins who go to such ceremonies to offer blessings by composing poems with reference to the Vedic scriptures. (coughs) 113, 107 to 110. No one could understand who was coming and who was going, who was dancing and who was singing, nor could they understand one another's language. Yet all unhappiness and lamentation were immediately dissipated, and people became all jubilant. Thus Jagannath Mishra is also overwhelmed with joy. Chandrasekhar Acharya and Srivas Thakur both came to Jagannath Mishra and drew his attention in various ways. They performed their ritualistic ceremonies. That means Chandrasekhar Srivas. Okay. They performed the ritualistic ceremonies prescribed at the time of birth according to religious principles. Jagannath Mishra also gave varieties of charity. Whatever riches Jagannath Mishra collected in the forms of gifts and presentations, and whatever he had in his house, he distributed among the Brahmanas, professional singers, dancers, bhattas, and the poor. He honored them all by giving them riches and charity. The wife of Srivas Thakur, whose name was Malini, accompanied by the wife of Chandrasekhara, Acharya Ratna, and other ladies, came there in great happiness to worship the baby with paraphernalia, such as vermilion, turmeric, oil, fused rice, bananas, and coconuts. Srila Prabhupada, vermilion, koi, well, that's how you spell it, fused rice, koi means the, where they pop the rice, you have it in the husk, you cook it in the sand, so if it's taken out of the husk, then it'll puff up, you'll get muri. But if you leave it in the husk and then cook it in the sand, then it will pop and it'll become that kind of much bigger than the and softer and, you know, have a funny shape to it, like popcorn. Mm-hmm. Like that. So that's fused rice. Bananas, coconuts, and turmeric mixed with oil are all auspicious gifts for such a ceremony. As there is puffed rice, so there is another preparation of rice called kai, or fused rice, which, along with bananas, is taken as a very auspicious presentation. Because of the marriage ceremony, what's being put into the fire, the ludge, that's kai. Mm-hmm. Like that. Also, turmeric mixed with oil and vermilion makes an auspicious ointment that is smeared over the body of a newborn baby or person who is going to marry. These are all auspicious activities in family affairs. We see that 500 years ago, at the birth of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, all these ceremonies were performed rigidly. But at present, such ritualistic ceremonies hardly ever take place. Generally, a pregnant mother is sent to the hospital, and as soon as her child is born, he is washed with an antiseptic, and this concludes everything. So, that's it. Right, because the oil, the turmeric, the vermilion, that would be that have that function afterwards. Because then, you know, it's very good for it's very good for the child. 113, 111. One day, shortly after Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was born, Advaitacharya's wife, Sita Devi, who is worshipable by the entire world, took her husband's permission and went to see that topmost child with all kinds of gifts and presentations. Srila Prabhupada, it appears that Advaitacharya had two different houses, one at Shantipur and one at Navadvip. When Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was born, Advaitacharya was residing not at his Navadvip house, but at his Shantipur house. Thereafter, as formally explained, text 99, from Advaita's old paternal house, Nijalaya, in Shantipur, Sita came to Navadvip to present gifts to the newborn child, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. 113, 112 through 114. She brought different kinds of golden ornaments, including armlets, necklaces, anklets, and bangles for the hand. There were also tiger nails set in gold, waist decorations of silk and lace, ornaments for the hands and legs, nicely printed silken saris, and a child's garment also made of silk. Many other riches, including gold and silver coins, were also presented to the child. Riding in a palanquin covered with cloth and accompanied by maidservants, Sita Thakurani came to the house of Jagannath Mishra, bringing with her many auspicious articles, such as fresh grass, paddy, gorochana, turmeric, kumkuma, and sandalwood. All these presentations filled a large basket. Srila Prabhupada. The words Vastra Gupta Dola are very significant in this verse. Even 50 or 60 years ago, in Calcutta, all respectable ladies would go to a neighboring place riding on a palanquin carried by four men. The palanquin was covered with soft cotton, and in that way there was no chance of seeing a respectable lady traveling in public. Ladies, especially those coming from respectable families, could not be seen by ordinary men. This system is still current in remote places. The Sanskrit word Asurya Pashya indicates that a respectable lady could not even be seen by the sun. Right? Because Draupadi mentions that. She's never been seen by the sun or the moon. That means she's not outside, you know, like that, without an umbrella, without somebody with, without, you know, like this. They wouldn't just walk around. They'd always have something.
But now, even when they were in exile? When she was in exile?
She was saying before that she was never, you know. But now then these idiots are trying to take off her sari. You know, so that was her point. You know, so they're not discriminating. So you know, you do that to a common person. Why you're doing that to her?
So they didn't
want a
different color.
Sorry?
They didn't like to be tanned by the sun.
No, they weren't much into that tanning kind of thing, no. It's just, yeah. But even if you look at it in the European, you look at those old paintings, they go back, that the girls are super white. Yeah, and then the men always had, they were always tanned because they were outside in the sun. But the same thing, they go out, they're on parasols and like that kind of thing. In the Oriental culture, this system has been very prevalent, because also in the Far East, and was strictly observed by respectable ladies, both Hindu and Muslim. We have actual experience in our childhood that our mother would not walk even next door to observe an invitation. Rather, she would go in either a carriage or a palanquin carried by four men. This custom was also strictly followed 500 years ago, and the wife of Advaitacharya, being a very respectable lady, observed the customary rules current in that social environment. Yeah. All the palanquins are outside.
Parked.
Yeah. Oh, I see the electric palanquins. Yes.
On the rope.
Yes. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jai Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki, Chaitanya Govinda Prabhu.